the streets are screaming now. They brought Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the topic today is, of course, the second presidential debate. Give you my analysis of that dog and pony show. But I also want to talk about, once again, the ongoing topic of the stimulus, fiscal stimulus negotiations, where we're at with regard to that, and the continuing million-plus unemployment claim jobs numbers. And then if we have time, a little preview of what's coming next week with the third quarter U.S. GDP numbers, preliminary GDP numbers coming out, and the spin that you're going to hear about that. So let's just jump in with the debate. You know, I don't know what to say. I'm not impressed with either of those guys. And the way they handled the debate, if you can call it a debate. Look, Trump's strategy, Trump's style, Trump's, quote, debating, unquote, strategy and style is really one in which he overwhelms his opponent with just a mountain of accusations and misrepresentations and lies. He throws this huge volume at his opponent. And, of course, that usually gets the opponent all flustered and doesn't know what to respond to. And the opponent's thinking about all the stuff he threw at him in that previous exchange. And the opponent's trying to figure out which one to talk about. And he hesitates and he looks like he's confused, which he is, simply because there's such a massive information thrown at him and personalized often, which has a greater emotional response. And the opponent hesitates and doesn't know, and fumbles and mutters and doesn't know what to say. Well, that's what Trump has been doing since 2015 with success. That's the way he, quote, debates. And it's kind of hard when there are lies and misrepresentations, and you know there are lies and misrepresentations. What can you say except, oh, they're a lie, you know, which isn't necessarily all that an effective a response because people are waiting for a more substance response. Just to say it's a lie, it looks like you're just trying to beg the question that you really have no answer. Well, that's part of his strategy, his tactics, his approach, his style as well. It's a style that opponents just can't come to terms with, especially when he overwhelms the debate. We saw in the first debate, he just totally overwhelmed it. But even in this one as well, throwing out so much information and, you know, speaking beyond his time limit in his response and insisting on a rebuttal and insisting on a second rebuttal. And, of course, the moderators don't know how to handle that either, and they let him get away with two or three rebuttals and going over the time limits in the rebuttals and so forth. So he dominates the debate. And if you probably counted the number of words that were spoken by the two candidates yesterday, you would find that Trump probably has two-thirds, maybe three-fourths of the words spoken. So just the volume of exposure that he gets in these events gives him an advantage. Now, he gets a double advantage when the opponent responds timidly and tepidly. And that's exactly what Biden did. Biden is no debater. I mean, that was a pretty poor performance, I thought. Of course, Trump's performance is pretty poor because of its very nature, full of lies, full of misrepresentations, a kind of a bullying light that we saw yesterday, as opposed to the first debate where we saw a bullying heavy. But Biden, you know, slow responses, only partial responses, which is always appears a partial response because there's so much overwhelming information thrown at him, often false, hard to respond to false other than saying lies. So we get this performance that we saw in which, did they really talk about the key issues going on? Yeah, okay, they talked about coronavirus, but neither of them, in my opinion, had a reasonable response to the epidemic, the pandemic that's going on now. I mean, what did Trump say? Oh, we're rounding the corner on the virus, right? It's going down. Well, we know factually that's just a lie, the opposite. We're, what, 80,000 cases higher than the previous two waves of the virus. You know, the first wave of the virus in March, April, about 30,000 infections a day. And that leveled off a little bit. And then July and August, 60,000 a day. And now we're at 80,000 a day. I mean, these waves keep coming. And they're getting worse, aren't they? Now, maybe we're dealing with them medically a little bit more effectively. You know, I think in the first wave, the tendency for the doctors was to stick a tube down people's throat and to load them up with steroids. And look, if you have other medical problems, if you're diabetic or something, throwing a steroid at somebody is just not what you want to do. So I think the doctors are learning. But the infection rate is going up. Third wave, some say it's all the same first wave. Well, that's semantics, you know. Just look at the infections and you see that there's three waves. And this is going to be the worst one. It's just beginning. So what did he say? Oh, it's going down. It's around the corner. Right? We've turned a corner, he said. Well, you know, Biden was right. You know, we turned the corner into an even worse situation than we've had before. But the way he said it was just so ineffective. Oh, and we're going to have a vaccine in 2 weeks. And then the moderator called Trump on that. You know, he said, can you guarantee it? The moderator said, oh, well, then he backs off. No. But, you know, Biden should have driven home at that time of the discussion that, look, all of the medical advice is that we really won't start distributing a vaccine if one is effective until spring. And then, of course, you know, it's going to go properly to the those who are most vulnerable and, you know, essential workers and so forth. Average folks aren't going to get this until maybe this time next year. Well, you know, this is the lies and misrepresentations that Trump overwhelms his opponent with. And the opponent's always responding and responding to falsifications and lies, which are hard to respond to other than saying they're lies, which aren't that all convincing when you just say they're lies. It's like, as I said, you can't come up with an explanation, so you just call it lies. Well, that's what they are. They're lies. Okay. So that's the exchange that we saw on the coronavirus at the start of the whole discussion. And then we get to the taxes issue, right? Trump's answer was, oh, I prepaid $10 million, prepaid taxes, $10 million. Sounds like, except for the adjective prepaid, sounds like he's paid $10 million. He's denying the fact he paid no taxes and he won't show his taxes. He's denying it by saying, oh, I prepaid. Oh, that's so clever. Well, look, you know, every business has to prepay quarterly what its estimated profits might be. And then at the end of the year, when it files its taxes, it comes up with all its exemptions and exceptions and all the loopholes and so forth. And then it gets all that money back, you see. That's the way it works. And when you have lots of loopholes and lots of exemptions and deductions and so forth, you get all of it back, and businesses get almost all of it back, most of them. Especially if you're in real estate, you see. There are all kinds of special loopholes for commercial properties that allow commercial property owners and those who make their money from commercial property, like commercial bonds and so forth. There's lots of loopholes and ways they get it back. So he says prepaid $10 million. Well, why didn't Biden jump on that and explain what I just explained to you? The prepaid doesn't mean what you finally pay when you get all of your loopholes. He could have made a big deal about loopholes, you know, in commercial property and real estate investors. But he didn't. Not sharp enough. He didn't jump on it. Well, he did look at the audience and say, you know, how much did you pay, middle class? He could have made a big issue not only of Trump not paying his taxes, but of most of these 1% wealthy people paying virtually nothing anymore. Nothing. You know, was it 90? I think the number is 90 out of the 500 largest corporations in the U.S., including Amazon and others, paid no taxes at all. None at all. Well, maybe he doesn't do it because the rescue stimulus bill in March, called the CARES Act, provided for $650 billion more tax cuts for businesses and investors. The Democrats agreed to that, didn't they? Well, if he went into that, he would have to criticize his own party for agreeing to that. Okay, so point is, Biden lost a great opportunity when this whole question of prepaid or taxes and Trump's taxes came up. He could have really struck home on that. And then, of course, there's a similar exchange occurred and lost opportunity by Biden occurred when, in passing, it was mentioned that Trump has accounts in China. Trump paid China, I don't know, was it millions in taxes? Well, he paid only $750 here. Yeah, and of course, that just came out. Those records just came out, and very clearly, he's paying taxes, Trump, all over the world to other governments, but not any to ours. Well, why is that? Well, because the tax laws are stricter on large corporations in China, especially foreign corporations, and they're virtually absent in the U.S. for multinational corporations. Multinational corporations, U.S. corporations, are allowed to move their money offshore and not pay taxes on it. They do this by, you know, intra-company pricing so that they report the profits that they've made in the U.S. Really, they report them in some offshore subsidiary, usually some tax haven, you know, in Ireland or Luxembourg or even Netherlands, right? That's how they do it. It's called inversions. He could have really struck home about the fact, he mentioned it, that, oh, you know, you have accounts in China. And Trump said, oh, no, I don't have accounts in China. I closed them. He gives this argument, how he closed them out in 2013-15, right, for Iran for president. Well, if he closed them out, how is he still paying taxes in China, right? He's got accounts in China. Not just in China. I wonder what his accounts are in Russia. Well, Biden lost another great opportunity to strike home on this tax question. Yeah, he mentioned it. And then when Trump says, oh, I closed those accounts, what did he do? He just dropped the whole ball. The problem with Biden, he doesn't know how to go for the jugular. You know, he's too tame. He's too tepid. He's too timid. And I tell you, when you have a crisis, people aren't attracted to timid rescues, are timid personalities. They're attracted to someone who appears that maybe they're aggressive enough to get the job done. Well, that's one of the attractions of Trump, you see, with his base. That's a problem with Biden. Okay, so he lost opportunities on China accounts. He lost opportunities on taxes in general and broadening it out. He lost opportunities on Trump's taxes here. And then Trump says, oh, I'm the greatest friend of blacks since Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, but his party's going around everywhere disenfranchising African-Americans in multiple states, doing everything they can to prevent black folks from voting. You know, in Texas, one drop box per county, no matter how large geographically the county is for mail-in votes, or how large the county is, like Houston County there, one drop box, that's it. Yeah. Well, that's one way to prevent votes, right? Another way is just to identify African Americans, like in Georgia, and declare that they're felons, therefore they don't get to vote, and take their votes and ballots and put them aside. And then investigators find out that, these people aren't felons when you look at the ballots. No, they just take a certain percentage out of those black neighborhoods voting and put them aside and declare they're felons. I mean, that's going on in maybe 20 states out there, especially the swing states. That kind of election fraud that Trump and the Republicans are engaging in. And he's the greatest friend of blacks since Lincoln. Yeah. I mean, it became very clear that Trump really wants to just open the economy. That's all. Doesn't really care what the consequences are. And, you know, that's just not Trump. That's a reflection of his supporters. A lot of small business people, rural kind of people, even non-small business people who have a small business mentality. And all they care about is their income. Let us open. We want to open. I don't care if grandma dies, you know, my business is more important. Well, that's what that reflects, you know, very clearly. There's a wide spectrum of populace in this country that has that attitude, you know. Better you die than I lose my business. And that's what Trump reflects. You see, that's part of his base. And you add, the rural, semi-rural, small town, you know, red state, heartland, whatever you want to call it, that's his base. So he's reflecting his base. That's just not his attitude. We have to open the economy. We can't let our economy collapse. Well, you know, what are they doing? Did they let their economy collapse in South Korea or even in Japan and in China and Australia and places like that? Look at their infection rates. Look at their, quote, death rates. Why? Because the government led the charge initially and shut down the economy, but then required everybody to take certain steps and then opened it up. We never did that here. No. And we're paying the price as a result. It's not true that you have to have 220,000 dead. Just look at other countries that have done it right. And everybody that's opened up prematurely or reopened up and didn't really have certain guidelines and regulations and so forth has had a significant second wave. Well, that's happening in Europe. Oh, they thought it was over. When they got it down, they opened up and here it comes. It's not going to be over until you have an effective vaccine distributed to 70% of the people. 70% herd immunity. Ah, but the Trump administration distorts the whole meaning of herd immunity. What they mean is that, well, let's let everybody get exposed and get sick. And when 70% of everybody gets sick, then we'll have herd immunity. Well, you know, how many people have been exposed in the United States? And how many more until you get to 70% exposed? Huh? Well, you're going to have a million deaths by the time you get that 70% exposed. Do you want that? Is that what you want? Well, that's what Trump's advisor, this quack radiologist who knows nothing about epidemiology, is recommending. And Trump says, oh, 99.98% of all the youth under 18 don't get it or get it and recover. Yeah, so, you know, let's let them just run amok. And they'll give it all to grandma and their parents, right? We have to open the economy. Yeah, of course we do. But at what cost? And how are you going to do it? Well, there is no how with Trump. It's just open it. Because that's what the small business people want. Now, another lie falsification that always keeps coming up from Trump is that, oh, he stopped the travelers from China and then from Europe. He moved on it early. Well, that's just not true factually, but Biden didn't really strike home on that either. Look, you know, CDC people conferred with Chinese counterparts on January 3rd. And they were warned by China on January 3rd. And of course, it's come out now, revealed in January, Trump actually said, oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad. He knew it. And then he, of course, in February says, oh, it's going to be over. You know, in a few weeks, it's going to be over by Easter. Oh, then in the summer. Oh, now we're turning the corner. How many times you got to be lied to? Yeah. Well, the fact is that Trump let 40,000 people from China, many of them Americans coming back, but other nationals as well, to come into the country before he instituted the ban on travel from China, air travel. 40,000 came into the country between January 3rd and the time of his ban. I don't remember exactly what date that was. It was sometime in, I think, late February, early March. 40,000. And then, you know, it was raging in Europe by that time, if you remember Italy. And what did Trump do? Oh, okay. Once it was raging, he imposed a ban on travel from mainland Europe, but not from the UK. He left that open. So you think people were stupid enough and wanted to come to the U.S. from Italy not to figure out, well, you fly to London to get to New York? I mean, he just blew that whole thing. But did Biden really expose all that? No, he let a lot of it slide. And then there was this exchange on who took money from Putin, right? Somehow Trump is trying to spin the line that Biden may have got, $1.5 million or several million dollars, or his son did, from Russia, from Putin. I don't know where that came up from, but, you know, if he's got some proof, he should bring it forward. That's just like his accusations that Trump's son made money off of Burisma, this company in the Ukraine. Now, that might be true, you know, because once the U.S. pulled off this coup in the Ukraine using fascists over there, right, took over the economy of that country, and yes, the U.S. did. Two people were appointed as czars after the coup to run the economy in the Ukraine. Two of them. One was a European from Germany, I think it was, and the other was the secretary, undersecretary, Virginia Nolan. Virginia Nolan, right? And Virginia Nolan, by the way, was the operative of the U.S. that funneled $5 billion to the fascists to pull off the coup in the Ukraine. She bragged about that publicly. She said that in a presentation over there that she wasn't aware was going to get reported over here. Yeah, she said the U.S. spent $5 billion to pull off that coup. Well, Virginia, who is a former private equity board member and owner of private equity firms. I forgot the name of the firm, you know, out of Chicago. Yeah, before she became the undersecretary under Hillary Clinton, right? And the U.S. Funneled money and pulled off the coup. And then, you know, with Virginia there running as co-economic czar, running the economy, oh, that was a signal for U.S. capitalists and investors and European to descend like vultures onto Ukraine and start staking out positions and buying up Ukrainian companies. And that's happened. Right. Integrating Ukraine's economy with the U.S. that used to be integrated with Russia. Right. A lot of capitalists made a lot of money. So it's quite possible that Hunter Biden, being on the board of this Ukrainian company, Burisma, and of course, board members get paid nicely, you know, received hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions of dollars. But no one really wants to expose that in the mainstream corporate media, you know. They don't want to expose that because then, you know, what that shows is that it could lead to pointing fingers to other people. You know, not just Hunter Biden, but others. To this date, all that Biden does is deny it. But the media doesn't really go there. So, you know, Trump may have a point in that regard. But, you know, it's like the pot calling the kettle black. Because Trump, of course, gets a lot of money from Russia. Not from Putin, from the Russian oligarchs. They're the only ones using the shelter, slush fund, Deutsche Bank, that kept Trump alive financially before he ran. He got a lot of money from Russia, but from the Russian oligarchs. So both of these guys, you know, have dirty hands as far as taking money from foreigners is concerned. Oh, but that's been going on for some time. Look, they're not the only ones or the latest ones. But the point is, Biden didn't really deflect Trump's charge about getting money from the Russians. He just denied it. And maybe, you know, it's not true. Maybe from the Russians is not true. Maybe not him, Trump, Biden personally. But he could have really driven home the fact of the Deutsche Bank oligarch's connection to Trump. You see, you got this certain wing of the U.S. capitalist class here that's been trying to make a big issue about Putin supporting Trump. But Putin doesn't need to get his hands dirty. You know, he can have the oligarchs do it for him. And I really believe that's the connection there. And probably using Giuliani and others who get a nice sweet cut off of all the deals. But did he push that home? Did Biden push home this oligarch connection? No. They want to phrase it as a Putin connection, not a Russian business connection. Because if they do, they open a can of worms like they would open it in the Ukraine, showing that it's not just Trump, that it's not just Hunter Biden, but it's scores or more of big American capitalists who got their hands in these deals over there. One of the most probably disgusting topics was the immigration and the kids. You know, the U.S. Purposely separated thousands of young kids from their families when they came to the U.S. You know, they put them in cages. They put these kids in cages and separated them from their families. And then they deported their families. And the kids are who knows where in the United States. Who knows where? Talk about human rights. My God, that's so disgusting. And this is conscious policy. I mean, it's come out that Trump and his immigration people said, you know, we want to do this as a warning. They're going to lose their kids if they come to the U.S. And it worked to some extent. And even to this day, there's 535 unidentified immigrant kids of various ages. Who knows where they are? The U.S. has no right to talk about human rights anywhere in the world anymore after that disgusting thing that they've done. Oh, but how was it handled by Trump and Biden? Yeah. Well, what Trump said was, oh, you know, Obama built those cages. It wasn't me. We're just using them. In other words, oh, you're just as much to blame as we are. And when he was asked, I forget exactly what the question was, you know, whether that was right, he said, good. It was good. Shows you where this guy has no empathy for anybody except his election. No empathy at all. And, you know, a lot of people who left his administration admitted that that's his personality. Well, did Biden really drive home on that? No. I mean, so you created some facilities before, and now because you created the facilities that Trump puts these kids in, and they were cages, that somehow it's your fault? Look, that's how ideology and propaganda works. I mean, these techniques were developed by Joseph Goebbels in the 20s and 30s. And what we're talking about here is the technique of you blame your opponent for the charges he's about to point at you with. You preempt him, you jump, and you claim he's 10 times worse than what he's about to say of you. And that's the technique that Trump uses all the time, you know, to hide the fact that he's taking money from the oligarchs. What he does is accuse Biden of taking money from the Russians, even not just the Ukraine, from the Russians and the Chinese, right? Trump has said at certain times that his son Biden got money off the Chinese. Well, this guy's got these accounts in China. They both have dirty hands, both of them, as does the entire U.S. capitalist class that does business globally. It's part of the empire. All this dirty dealings and bribes and paybacks and so forth is normal for the empire. And all these political elites are part of that. And they all got their hands in the till. All of them. Maybe that's why, you know, Biden hesitates and doesn't really drive home. Because if he did, you know, he might be implicating some of his own people, his own wing of the corporate class of the corporate party of America. You see, we don't have two-party system. We got a one-party system with two wings, the Republican wings, or what's now called the Trump-publican, and the Democrat wing. And they're both neoliberal policies. One set is more aggressive than the other, but they're both neoliberal. But, you know, Trump is really taking a playbook from the fascists, from the Nazis, on how he debates and how he charges his opponent. Look, you know, before Hitler took over, it was very clear that the one strain of Nazi propaganda was to attack the electoral system, attack the democracy, undermine the liberal parties, let alone the socialists and communists. I mean, socialists and communists, you just go and draw them out into the street, knock heads, and let the police watch, right? That was the strategy for dealing with socialists and communist workers. But for the liberals, it was to undermine the whole idea of democracy and undermine the whole idea of electoral fraud, you see? As long as you were losing, it was fraud. Well, I mean, isn't this what Trump is doing? Yes. Yes. And by the way, you know, the Nazi Party wasn't always dominated by Adolf Hitler. No, it wasn't until 1926-27 that the party became Hitler's party and that its members believed Hitler could do no wrong, no matter what. Sound familiar? Yeah. Contending leaders and groups within the Nazi Party, you know, were outmaneuvered and eliminated, driven out of that party by Hitler. And he took over 1926-27, and that was his party from that point on. And they even passed inner party rules and regulations that Hitler could veto any position or statement by anyone else in the party. That was the leadership principle, right? He had total control over program and policy, and he could negate anything that the party conferences and party committees and other party leaders said just by saying so. So accuse your opponent of even greater violations before he says you violated something. That's a principle of propaganda, fascist propaganda. And then repeat it, repeat it, repeat it over and over and over. So people start believing it, right? And don't respond. Don't respond to questions directly, right? Which is what Trump did. Go over the limits. Don't follow any limits. Don't follow any rules. Say you will, but go and break the rules, right? And insist on the right to respond and rebut again and again and again. Overwhelm the moderator. That's exactly what he did. Exactly what he did. And then, you know, turning my commentary to Biden, right? Other than his obviously slow responses and partial responses and not driving home opportunities, right? What do we got? We got Biden selling himself. This is the empathetic old grandpa image, right? Grandpa cares for you, right? Grandpa is not going to get all upset. You know, listen to Grandpa. He had a great opportunity on the public option, you know, when that came up, public option, you know, this substitute for Medicare for all that won't work. Trump accused him and says, oh, the public option, which is really kind of a government insurance program, which is roughly the same that everybody in Congress has, right? Total medical care, special program just for Congress people, right? And the people in the administration. They've got socialized medicine, Medicare for all, whatever you want to call it, right? But, oh, we're just going to get a public option. Well, you know, Trump accused them to say, well, that's going to wreck the other private insurance industry. Well, yeah, it'll probably keep prices down lower, won't it? And the other insurers will have to compete and lower their prices, or they're going to lose their people to the public option. And yeah, it will mean less profits for private insurers. Yeah. They'll have to keep their prices down. So what? So what? You know? Oh, Trump says that's going to mean we're going to 150 million people are going to lose their employer coverage. No. Well, first of all, it's not 150 million. But did Trump say anything about that? I mean, Biden say anything about that? No. He didn't drive home. That's a fake number. Come on. You know, that's a fake number. That's not true. And what he should have said was, so what? Let them go out of business. You know, there are a bunch of price gougers and all kind of problems with private health insurers. You know, let people go to a government plan if it's better and cheaper and more coverage. But no, you know, they can't really take on the health insurance companies because they give them big money, them, even the Democrats, you see, big lobbyists. Health insurers are among the biggest lobbyists of all the industries. And the Democrats get a lot of money. And in fact, Obamacare, as some nurses I know called it, health insurance company subsidy bill, which is true. $900 billion a year to cover, what, 10, 15 million people. $900 billion a year bribe to the health insurance companies not to fight it. Yeah, that's what ACA is. Well, there's some good things about ACA, you know. I don't put it all down. The Medicare coverage, Medicaid rather, Medicaid coverage was good, you know. Limits, no limits on lifetime costs, you know, other provisions, you know, like pre-existing conditions and so forth. There's some good things about it, but the pricing with what we're paying for it is a big bribe. Now, and now, of course, premiums going up and up. Well, you know, Biden should have said, sure, let them go out of business, you know. They're gouging the people anyway. Of course, he wouldn't say that because they get a lot of money from it, right? So, you know, the public option opportunity discussion was that ball was dropped, right? He could have said 80 million people now are uninsured or underinsured. 80 million. And that's a fact. Cite the fact, cite the source, right? And then demand that Trump cite his source, which he wouldn't, because there isn't. Fracking, the fracking question. Biden dropped the ball there, too. You know, that was all about Pennsylvania vote. Come on, right? One of the battleground states, one of the six that will determine the election. Yeah, he said, well, you know, somewhere down the future. Well, what he should have said, I think, was, no, we're not going to ban fracking, but boy, are we going to invest in alternative energy and drive the cost down on alternative energy so it becomes really clear that it's cheaper and more economical for businesses to use alternative energy, and the fracking industry will die of its own, just like the coal industry is now dying of its own. That would have been a better answer. And then we have the China trade discussion, right? China trade. I mean, Trump's total failure, his trade war against China, total failure. You know, it's cost us $60 billion plus in subsidies to agribusiness because the farm sector in the U.S. has paid the price of the China trade war, paid the price. And the deficit, Biden did mention, the deficit is going up with China. Trump had promised $100 billion more purchases by China this year, on top of the average $40 billion that China was buying every year, I mean, every month, rather, right? He promised $100 billion more would result. You know, he signed that trade deal last December. And what has China done? China's total purchases of the U.S., $56 billion to date. Not $100 billion or $140 billion, no, 56. It's been a total failure. Why didn't he say that? And I'll tell you what he should have said is that, oh, yeah, you've provided all these direct payment subsidies to agribusiness in the U.S., I think you did mention that the taxpayer pays, and of course that is taxpayer money. Right? You've had to buy off the farm base, $50-60 billion. I forget exactly what it is. He wants to provide even more in the next stimulus bill. Well, why didn't he point out, Biden point out the fact that it's going to agribusiness? Because we have a record number of small farm bankruptcies going on right now. Why didn't he cite that number? You know, I think in 2018, when this trade war began, we had, I believe I'm citing the correct number, 10,000 bankruptcy filings by small farmers. Small farmers aren't getting bailed out. This is money for, you know, Archer Daniel Midlands and these other big guys. In other words, he's either not prepared properly, Biden, you know, or, you know, he just doesn't have the temperament to go for the juggler in these debates. And, you know, what's really disgusting here is that what else did he not press on? He, Biden. I think he should have exposed Trump even more by pressing him on this QAnon conspiracy goofies, right? He could have done that. Or Proud Boys, right? Or Trump's silence on the Michigan kidnapping of the government plan, governor up there, right? Trump has said nothing about that. Well, that's kind of like a silent endorsement. It's okay to make plans, all you radical right, to kidnap governors in Democratic states, right? It's okay. Well, did he say anything about Trump's silence on all that? No. And what about Trump's plans to stop the mail-in ballot voting? Did he push on that? No. So all this right-wing association of Trump, he left wide open. Didn't go after him. And did anybody say anything about the 35 million still unemployed in this country after 6-7 months? Are the millions of evictions that are happening, rent evictions, are the widening food lines, or the fact that you've got 35 million more people who have lost their unemployment, their health insurance, or that Trump broke off negotiations on the stimulus bill here that's been pending since July, actually since May, broke it off. Or that his Republican friends in the Senate, led by Mitch McConnell, are preventing any vote on a stimulus bill here. Did he say anything about that? No. Or the fact that PPE equipment is still mostly being offshored 7 months later. Say anything about that? I don't hear anything. Payroll taxes, Social Security. Trump is destroying Social Security, but the payroll tax he just passed with an executive order, a deferral. Okay, well, did Biden say anything the fact that workers who have their payroll tax deferred now are going to have to pay twice the payroll tax next year? Twice? Did he say anything about that? No. Did he say anything about McConnell being the obstacle to a stimulus deal in the Senate? What did he say about North Korea and foreign policy, right? Trump courting North Korea and got nothing to show for it. Absolutely. Oh, and China. What did he say about China? Oh, you know, what Biden says, we sent a B-1 bomber over the islands in the South China Sea to show the Chinese that, we don't want them to build these islands in the South. We sent a flyby. And you know what else was missing? The same day or the day before, the news came out about the opioid crisis in the United States. The news came out. Purdue Pharma, big pharma, source of OxyContin for 20 years, pushing this. They knew it was addictive. They knew it. The emails and the correspondence is out. And the Sackler family that owned it at the time in 2006, said, oh, problems are coming here. We better cash in our money, take it out of the company, and put it somewhere else. And you know how much the Sackler family took out of Purdue Pharma? It's come out. $10 billion in $4 billion cash and the other insecurities. They moved it somewhere else. Because the suit is against the settlement that they just had on the suit is against the company, Purdue Pharma, not against the Sackler family themselves. You see, that's what corporations are all about. Corporations were created in the late 19th century, as we know them now, as protections, liability protections for the capitalists. Put your money in a company, and if the company kills people, you can only sue the company. You can't sue the owners of the company. Yeah, that's what a corporation is. That's the difference between a corporation and non-corporate company, a business, a proprietorship or a partnership. You know, corporations have liability protection for their investors. So, you know, the settlement is to take $8 billion back from Purdue, the company, after the Sackler family took $10 billion out of it. Oh, the Sacklers are going to pay $225 million as part of the settlement. Well, they took $10 billion out, and they're paying $225 million? Come on. Well, did Biden say anything about this? Not one word. You know, we got tens of thousands. I think it's something like last 3 years, averaging 50 to 70,000 people a year in the U.S. dying from opioid overdoses. And synthetic opioids like fentanyl and OxyContin account for the vast majority of that, maybe 30, 40,000. Yeah, the Sacklers are killed 30, 40,000 people a year. They knew it. They knew it and they pushed it. And now they get to keep $9.8 billion. Anything said about that? Nothing. Oh, look, that's capitalism at its worst, isn't it? Yeah. And the laws, the bankruptcy laws are written so that these guys can slip out. They can slip out. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're slipping out. Nothing said about it. Okay, well, you know, I've taken most of the time talking about this dog and pony show we saw yesterday. I'm not impressed with either one, tell you the truth. No one really talked about what's going on. What's going on is yesterday another million plus, if you count the state and federal employment, unemployment benefit claims, a million plus, another week. It's been over a million plus ever since the beginning of July of new unemployment claims, new. And we got a million people, a million people flowing out the other end, exhausting their unemployment benefits, a million. Yeah. A million in, a million out. 35 million still unemployed. Did they talk about that? No, they didn't talk about that either, right? Stimulus negotiations, they're dead. As I predicted, McConnell in the Senate was going to block it all, which he's done. And now Kudlow of the administration says, oh, it doesn't look like we're going to get any. They're not going to push McConnell. Isn't that a phony negotiations to try to suck the Democrats into reducing their claims even more? Look, both parties are at $2 trillion, parties meaning Trump and the Democrats. But it's not going anywhere because the Senate Republicans, led by McConnell, don't want it. They're going to stop it. And yet, next week, we're going to see third quarter preliminary GDP numbers. And what are those numbers going to say? They're going to say, oh, we totally recovered in the third quarter. Yeah, 35 million unemployed, and we totally recovered. Millions being evicted, food lines growing, and we've totally recovered. Third wave of coronavirus growing, and we've totally recovered, and political crisis coming here within a couple weeks, the dimensions of which none of you are even capable of imagining yet. And oh, we're recovered. Around the corner is going to happen. The greatest economy recovery in the world coming, right? A vaccine coming before the end of the year. Everything's coming, coming, but nothing gets here. Okay. That's it. I've had my rant for today. I'm out of here.